How is ministering going in your ward? Has the excitement worn off? Do you find that you still can't motivate those you lead to reach out and minister to those who need it most? Don't worry, Leading LDS is here to help. Go to leadinglds.org/ministering book and you can get a free copy of my book called A Culture of Ministering, Leading the Relief Society and Elders Quorum to Minister Unto His People. This book isn't just about ministering, it's about how to lead the ministering effort in your Relief Society or Elders Quorum. Again, visit leadinglds.org/ministering book to get a free copy for you or your favorite leader. Leading LDS is a nonprofit organization dedicated to enhancing leadership ability and capacity of lay leaders in order to accelerate the mission of The Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints. Leading LDS is not owned nor operated by the LDS Church, and any opinions expressed on this podcast do not reflect the views of any specific organization. All donations given to Leading LDS are tax deductible and go towards the support of Leading LDS. For more information, visit leadinglds.org.
Hi there, my name is Mike Brady, currently residing in Chubbuck, Idaho, and Leading LDS has helped me break out of my prescriptive approach to the church, to leadership, parenting, life in general. And most importantly, has been kind of a litmus test to help me determine if I'm following Christ or just following some rule or handbook without the context of Christ's love for the people I'm leading or interacting with. It's been a very good mirror to hold up to myself. And I first realized on my mission almost 20 years ago that I'm very much a handbook or checklist kind of person and was really rather robotic. Leading LDS has helped me consider the perspectives and approaches of leaders who have years and decades of experience being discipled and leaders. And I've felt my blinders come off and have become more compassionate to the situations and plights of the people in my ward, even with my own children. I realize that not all are repenting robots like I am, but if you are, Leading LDS can definitely broaden your perspective and give you some examples of how to do so. Most importantly, how to grow and change will come through the Holy Ghost, which I feel each time I queue up a podcast. Good luck and God bless. Be a leader, not a calling.
Hey, hey, hey! Welcome back to another episode of the Leading LDS Podcast. This is another segment of How I Lead. Now, if you're not familiar with the How I Lead segment, this is where we go out and find the most prolific leaders, invite them onto the podcast, and they share some principles relating to a specific leadership calling and tell us how they lead. And there has been much clamoring for us to get more content and information out there about the Young Men's Program. And I couldn't agree more. And I get it. We need more Young Women's Program, How I Leads, Ward Mission Leaders. We'll get there. Okay. Just be patient. We'll get there. If you know somebody, send the name in. We'd love to chat with them. But this one is on Young Men's, and it's with Aaron Chesley. And he's actually currently serving as a bishop in Boise, Idaho. And he was kind enough to, he came down to Utah with his wife a few months ago, and we connected, and he said, I want to take you and your wife out to dinner. And so we went. Red Iguana, some of the best mole on the planet. If you're ever in Salt Lake and want to take me out to lunch or dinner with my wife, we'd love to do that. We're happy to pay for ourselves. But, you know, mainly I just want to connect. Okay, I'm not looking for a free lunch or dinner. Well, okay, that's not entirely true, but you know what I mean. But Red Iguana, my favorite restaurant in Salt Lake. And it gives you a well-rounded Salt Lake experience. But anyways, Aaron and his wife came down, and we went out to eat, had a great conversation over dinner. And through the talking, we said, you know what, we need to do a How I Lead episode. And he said, I think we should do it on my time as Young Men's President. And so that's exactly what we did. And the principles, this is a good one, guys. Okay, I mean, they're all good. They're all good. But this one has some gems in it. So please turn up the volume, pay attention. And here is my interview with Aaron Chesley from Boise, Idaho. Through the powers of the internet, I'm talking with Aaron Chesley from Boise, Idaho. How are you, Aaron?
I am fantastic, Kurt.
Awesome. Well, I will probably mention this in the introduction, but you were kind enough. Recently, you were in Utah, and you knew you were coming to Utah, so you reached out, and you took me and my wife out to dinner. It was so nice of you, and we chatted. We geeked out over all things leadership in the LDS context, and it was just fun to... I always enjoy meeting people in the flesh that are maybe out there listening, so... That was awesome. I appreciate you doing that.
Hey, it's a small, tiny little thank you. I think I explained to you when we met that that without Leading LDS and listening to the podcast, I definitely wouldn't be the same person I am today. So I just, we were there for that Deanna Murphy. She's doing
That's right.
A class down there. And so like, hey, if there's anything I can do, and So it was good to meet you and your wife, and to, I mean, one dinner doesn't cut it, but I wanted to at least do something.
Awesome. Well, again, I appreciate it. And we had a great conversation, and that conversation led to this conversation where we want to do a How I Lead interview. Now, you are currently serving as a bishop, but you have a lot of experience as a young men's president. And that was, I don't know if you said it, but that would be maybe more intriguing. You've only been a bishop for what, 18 months now?
Correct. Yeah, a little over a year and a half.
Right. You still got your training wheels on. I mean, you may not have much to talk to about that, right?
I'm kidding. I think they're just barely starting to come off now.
So how many times have you been a young men's president?
I've been young men's president twice.
And what's the, and for how long?
The first time was about a year and a half, and the second time was probably 2.5 years.
Nice. Very good. And was that the calling you had before being called as a bishop?
No, actually, I was the scoutmaster. Well, I've been the scoutmaster 3 times in the last 21 years of my marriage with my wife. And so I was actually the scoutmaster, and then I'd been taken out of the scoutmaster role and was called into the stake young men's presidency. And I was in the stake young men's presidency for probably 4 months, and then I was put in as a bishop.
Awesome. Perfect. So we'll definitely jump into the young men's world here and see what we can learn from some of your experience. You have some great leadership principles that we can go off of. But let's get just a little background on you. What does the leading LDS world need to know about you and your background?
I grew up, well, kind of between Gilbert, Arizona and Burley, Idaho. Normal background. Both of those are kind of meccas for LDS populations. And just seminary, 4 years of seminary, graduate, served a mission in the Guatemalan North Mission. I served in the military. So right after graduation, I enlisted. My parents actually had assigned me in to join the Army Reserve at 17, right out of high school. And then went on my mission and then came home, married my high school sweetheart, and went to BYU, Idaho, BYU, and then graduated from USC.
Awesome. And a little factoid about your time going in the military, since it happened directly after high school, right? That they made you an elder when you were still 17.
That's correct. My bishop, he had some foresight and some inspiration, I'm sure. And he said, Aaron, I feel like we should, you know, ordain you to be an elder. And so I was 17 when I was ordained an elder, and it worked out really well. There were some experiences I had in the Army that came in handy for blessings and ordinations and confirmation.
Awesome. And so considering like the military, I think most bishops and stake presidents, they sort of, they have some muscle memory in place that to help them with young men and young women who are leaving on missions, you know, as far as what to say to them, how to help them prepare and those things. I mean, obviously some do it better than others, but any advice you'd have for a bishop helping somebody prepare to enter the military?
Yeah, I thought about some of the young men that I have been with during the young men's program have gone on to the military. One thing to make sure that they understand is that they kind of go with their eyes wide open. The military is really hard on families. So that's one thing. It's really, you can either kind of fold into the regimen of, you know, being in the military and kind of abandoning a lot of the standards that you have as a church member, or you can stand out and sometimes be a loner. And so making sure that these young men and young women now understand that there might be a lot of times when you're by yourself, you know, if you're going to stick with your standards, it's a pretty difficult environment, but it's a great environment for learning and leadership. And I loved my time there. It was a good experience.
Yeah, that's fascinating. Maybe it's a future episode that we need to put together as far as what to say or how to help prepare young men and women who are entering the military, especially maybe right out of high school. Because when you send someone on a mission, you're not necessarily concerned about their social influences that'll be around them because it's a bunch of missionaries, right? Other than maybe the silly things missionaries do, but there's no, you know, major moral temptation maybe that a missionary faces as compared to going into the military.
Very much so. Yeah. The any temptation really that you could ever, you know, probably imagine that'll occur. I was the designated walker and the designated driver a lot of nights.
Yeah, for sure. So tell us about about your wife and kids. I understand you just went through the torturous process of dropping your daughter off at the missionary training center.
We are leaving Wednesday, yes.
Oh, so it hasn't happened yet. But the time that this is published, you have wiped many tears from your face, probably.
And so, yeah, this Wednesday, we'll be driving down to Provo from Boise and dropping my daughter, my oldest daughter, Haley, off at the MTC. She's going to be serving in the Manchester, New Hampshire mission. And,
fantastic.
She's excited. I mean, just today, she's just getting really super excited to go.
That's fantastic. Well, good luck to her. And she's the oldest of how many?
Five. So girl, boy, girl, boy, girl.
Wow. You figured that out, huh? That's great.
It worked out.
Awesome. And you got, obviously, as a bishop, a supportive wife that maybe is strong support most of the time, like my wife was. I know there's some tough days as a bishop's wife.
Yeah. She's the reason kind of really who I am. She's made me who I am just because I want to be better, try to get up to her level. And so, yeah, she's been outstanding. And I had some good advice from my stake president. He said, your wife, you know, she's kind of like counselor 0.5. You know, whatever you can tell your counselors and your bishopric, you can tell your wife, you know, within the realms of, you know, privacy and whatnot. But he said that that wife, her take and input, a lot of times women have better intuition on certain things than men do. And so, she's definitely one of my best counselors, and I've been grateful for her. I mean, that's really who I am.
I love that advice. You know, obviously there's going to be some instances that there's a few things you can't share with your spouse, but nonetheless, as a counselor, you know, that's a good way to see it, that an additional counselor because this is such a powerful experience. It's important to involve the wife as much as possible in some of these blessings that you experience as a bishop. And we have future episodes coming up that will hopefully touch more on that. That's one feedback we're getting, that there needs to be more content for bishops' wives. And so we will definitely make that happen. Well, Aaron, anything as far as you're being called as a young men's president that stands out? Do you remember that those feelings you went through when you were first called as young men's president? Were you excited? Were you nervous? Anything come to mind?
The first time I was called, we were in Springville, Utah, and we were in a family ward. We were going to school at BYU, and we expecting our second child, our son, Bryce. And I was, maybe 24, 25. I mean, I was just a young pup, and I worked really well with the bishop. I was the ward clerk for a while, and then he called me in as the young men's president. And I think he just saw just a raw, just like, do whatever it takes type of mentality. I mean, I'd never been any type of young men's organization before, since, you know, I was in the priest corps and as a young man, but knew that I would work as doggedly as I needed to get whatever needed to get done. My two counselors, they were both, you know, men with full families and, you know, teenagers, and, you know, so actually some of their sons were in my, you know, priest's corps. And I just remember not having any idea or any clue or what was supposed to be happening or what should be happening. But I remember just kind of asking a lot of questions and just remembering working as hard as I could just to make sure that stuff wasn't getting left in the cracks. So that was the first one. It's pretty overwhelming. And as you're aware, you know, there's just not a whole lot of training that's out there. There wasn't leading LDS for sure. And so I didn't have this, you know, resource. My second time as being called as young men's president, we moved to Boise, and the ward that we moved into, it had been split once and created a new ward. And then a couple of years later, it was split again to create a third ward. And I was part of that split off of the original ward we moved into. And so it was a new bishop. And so he and I knew each other really well from the original ward we were both from before. And he extended the call to me to be a men's president. And after serving in, the first time as young men's president, we moved back to Idaho, and I was the first counselor in the young men's presidency. And then we moved to another house in Burley, and I became the scoutmaster. And so I'd kind of done all three levels. Moving back to Boise, I was again in the first counselor in the young men's presidency, and then scoutmaster again. And then moved in, you know, asked to be the young men's president. So I had some time to then kind of understand and soak up what it entailed in the young men's organization. And so the second time I got called, I was more ready. And I already had some kind of ideas of here's how I would, you know, organize. And this is what was important to me as the Young Men's president. So the second time, you know, I was much more prepared and kind of not as rough around the edges.
Awesome. Love it. And as I do with these How We Lead interviews is I ask you to prepare maybe 5 leadership principles that you live by and would recommend to other people that being called as a young men's president. So let's go through these. The first one he said is 1/2 of 1%. The spirit is the most important factor in the priesthood third hour. What do you mean by that?
All right. There's a story that I want to tell about this 1/2 of 1%. And so this was my third stint as the scoutmaster. And we had some pretty rambunctious young men in our youth, in our group, in our deacons quorum. And there was one, and I'd been in the elders quorum presidency prior to this, you know, the scoutmaster calling. And in the elders quorum, I just loved going to the elders quorum and listening to the lessons and participating in the lessons. And I kind of get my spiritual, you know, rejuvenation. And I got called into this, you know, scoutmaster role. And I would just, I'd go home, just kind of still feel wanting, you know, to have that spirit kind of get that fuel, you know, take me through that next week. And so I prepared this lesson and I was trying to prepare this lesson. And, you know, we had two or three kids on the side of the wall there. We had chairs that were stacked up against the wall. And two of these kids were playing, you know, King of the Hill and trying to see who could tear each other off to sit on the chairs during Deacon's Quorum.
Okay.
And so I just was like, I couldn't feel the spirit. You can't feel a spirit when you want to kill somebody. And so there was that contention,
yeah.
You know? And so I had my manual and I just threw it on the ground and just slammed it right on the ground. And I said, all right, I said, you guys are all dismissed. Go find your parents. Go serve your parents for the rest of the church. And so I was just really frustrated. I was like, I want to feel the spirit. And so that whole week, I was like debating, it's like, is this where I call it? I'm going to pull the ejection handle and say, I'm done and say, you got to find someone else or am I going to stick it out? And, you know, what am I going to do? And so I prayed and fasted and thought about it. And so I came up, I added all of the minutes in a year that these kids have in their lives. And then I added up the minutes that if we went to 1 hour every Sunday, and that's not including general conference or state conference or anything else, we had that last hour, and usually we don't get a full hour, with these young men, it would add up to be 1/2 of 1% of their lives, or how much time we get to spend with them in that third hour. And so I tried to distill what is most important in a person's conversion. Like if there was a silver bullet, what would it be to say, you know, to help someone be converted to the Lord, you know, to the gospel and build the love of Christ's atonement. And I distilled it down to the spirit and, you know, kind of like the seed, you know, that talks about the seed of faith. The first thing has to be a desire. And so I tried to peel back the onion layer. Okay, well, what formulates the desire? And the only thing I could come up with was the spirit. The spirit has to touch somebody's heart for them to have that first desire for them to exercise that faith. And so that was what I decided. It's like, that's what's most important in this classroom is we got to have the spirit, because without the spirit, they're not going to have that desire and they're not going to exhibit any faith. And so I prepared this lesson. And so it was 1/2 of 1%. And I printed out a piece of paper that said 1/2 of 1%. I stuck it in a paper protector, you know, the kind of like folder paper protectors. And I stuck it to the outside of the door of the classroom in the ward, in the chapel there. And so all the boys came in that Sunday, that next Sunday, and I apologized. I said, hey, I lost my cool. I apologize. Let me tell you where I'm coming from. I want you guys to understand why this is important to me, why it's important you guys, you know, listen. And so I explained to them that 1/2 of 1%, that's how much time I had with them to be able to try to bring the spirit into the classroom and have that spirit teach them. I can talk till I'm blue in my face. Their parents can talk till they're blue, in their face. But the spirit is what's going to make the difference. And so we kind of made a deal. I said we can mess around and they know I have fun. I mean, we went camping every month. And so we go have fun. And we went backpacking, and they know I like, you know, camping and backpacking and mutual activities. We had a lot of fun. And so I said, let's have the fun on Wednesday nights and campouts. But on Sundays, I want to have the spirit here And so as a reminder, I'm going to have this taped to the door that if you're not ready to feel the spirit and participate in a spiritual class, I need you guys to just go sit with your parents because you're distracting everybody else. If you're not ready, either, you know, go find your parents or wait until you are ready. There were times where we had a couple of kids, they'd sit out in the foyer for just a few minutes on the couch and kind of get their energy out a little bit. And then when they, you know, at a point, they're like, okay, I have some self-control. And so then they'd come into the door. That's where that one half of 1% is. We don't have a whole lot of time with these youth. And so those times where we meet with them on priesthood, that third hour, it's really precious. And as a bishop, I'm trying to get that, you know, opening exercises as short as possible. So we do have more time in that class, but the spirit is what's most important. And so having them understand the expectation to say, hey, no, we're not going to be on cell phones. We're not going to be joking around. We're not going to be fighting over sitting on the chairs. You know, none of those distractions. We need to have a spirit. And so let's come to agreement on that. So that's where that one half 1% is.
Oh man, there's so much I love about that. That, I mean, it goes back to this simple principle of the importance of setting vision with those you lead. I mean, you gave them such a purpose and a reason to be there. And you were so clear that you were impacting the culture of that meeting. I love that so much. So did you feel like it worked? I mean, do you remember any notable experiences that really proved that this effort was working?
I know it worked. I mean, just the kids, I mean, you know, their understanding and desire to learn, it was just almost really like night and day. No more fighting, no more horsing around. They were there to feel the spirit. And the deacons quorum present, it kind of seemed like after that is when we started to be able to do like duty to God reporting. And so we could, you know, we'd spend some time going over duty to God and having each one of them, you know, learn that share and do the sharing portion of that before the lesson started. And so it definitely impacted the spirit of the quorum.
Ah, I love that. Love that. Next point you put is training. Pretty much nobody knows what they're doing when they get called into the young men's. That you can say that for pretty much any auxiliary or any role. But how important was training for you?
So I learned the heart, you know, as the first time as the young men's president. I mean, I just felt like I was just, you know, kind of, I was in all these meetings and I kind of had, you know, my own expectations of what I felt was important. And because of that, it kind of seemed like I was doing everything. I really didn't know what other people's jobs were or expectations were. And so I just kind of piled everything onto myself. I had high expectations. I wanted them to be met. And so I kind of did everything and I just got really burned out almost. And so when I became the first counselor, we moved back from Utah to Idaho and I was in the Rupert Ward. Our Bishop Rick, they had formal training. They sat down with the young men's presidency and we had formal training. I think it was like 3 Sunday nights or maybe I think it was 3 Sunday nights. And we went through the handbook, the church handbook, and went through all of what's expected for each position or, you know, each the president and the counselors and advisors and instructed us, you know, as a presidency, what is expected and then gave us guidance and trained us on what, you know, what they had learned as being part of the young men's when they were young or, you know, throughout their time within the church and sent us, you know, assignments and printouts. And I just came out of there thinking this is, you know, now I wish I would have had this, you know, the first time we went through. And I kind of kept that with me when I became the young men's president the second time. I would have a presidency meeting at least once a month. And I would include all of the advisors. It wasn't just the counselors because I felt that the advisors were almost as an extension as the counselors. They were involved with the young men in different, you know, in their personal life, you know, or their neighbors. And so I didn't want to have anything lost in translation between the counselor and the advisors. And so I included all of the advisors and the counselor into these young men presidency meetings. And as a young men, you know, advisor or counselor, I knew from my past experience that it's not always the feeding, you know, that spiritual feeding that you expect. And so I tried to infuse my presidency meetings with spiritual experiences and with scriptures and, you know, have people share some experiences that they've had either with young men or in their personal lives. So we can kind of make sure we have that spiritual aspect of it. So these guys, you know, there's some spirituality that they're getting as well. And so just training, setting again, those expectations. Another thing is making sure that the spouses now as a bishop, and as when I was in the young men's presidency, when we would ask, you know, men to serve in the Young Men's Organization, now that I've been there long enough, I make it a point to talk to the, you know, the wives and let them know and understand that, you know, there's a big time commitment here. You two as a companionship need to work together. And what I've learned is that I've had to abandon a lot of my, you know, hobbies. I have my garages full of like my paintball gear, or golfing clubs, and, you know, you can name it. And I've had to pretty much shelve it and say, okay, now scouting is going to be my hobby. And so I got into backpacking and camping, and I would kind of invest into what I was doing as a scout leader. And so that's one of the things is having that communication or that training, both formal training and then, you know, talking to the spouses and making sure that their expectations are met and that, you know, they're like, oh, I just thought it was a Wednesday night thing. Like, well, you know, let them know that, you know, here's some the camp house that we're going to be doing. And so they're kind of their eyes are open as well, instead of just, you know, expecting, you know, an hour a week.
Yeah. And you mentioned the training aspect of not just letting it be a correlation meeting, like, because from my perspective, and I've never served directly in Young Men's, but from my perspective, it looks like he can just become this coordinating monster, right? To where, okay, what's the next activity? Who's doing what? Okay, we have, you know, scout camp to come in this weekend. And it's just, there's so many little details that go back and forth that it's easy to let some of that spiritual interaction not exist. And especially, like you said, it's sometimes difficult on Sunday to even get that you miss being in an adult elders quorum class where that's more prominent. And so being intentional about the spirituality in those pregnancy meetings sounds like it was crucial.
For me, yeah, that was one of the focus. Just make sure that we're all fed. I mean, this is a, you know, it's a volunteer calling. And, you know, there's times where it's like, you wouldn't be able to pay me to do what I'm doing voluntarily. And so, you know, there's got to be something out of it. And that something should be your, you know, spirituality and feeling good about what you're doing.
Yeah, love that. Anything else with this point of training that you haven't mentioned?
It's almost moot now with the church leaving out of the scouts, but in my first stint as a scout master, I was an Eagle Scout. And so I figured, oh, I'm good. I know about scouting. And so I didn't invest too heavily into like the additional scout training. My second and third stints, I did all of the, you know, the classes and, you know, everything. I went, they had like University of Scouting and different things like that. And so I went and participated for all of BSA stuff that I could get into or get involved with, you know, round tables and whatnot. And it made a huge difference in my ability to lead as a scout master. And so that would have been another thing is like, as a scout master, get involved with the scouting. And it does take additional time, but it is invaluable that what you can learn from it.
Yeah, great point. And it'd be interesting to see what sort of training comes in the future once the scouting is behind us. But
yeah, that's true.
And the next point is planning. There should never be a planning night as an activity. I love this concept. Tell us more.
Yes. The fastest way that you can discourage a youth from attending mutual is to say, we're having a planning night. What that means is that nobody knows what the heck is going to be going on. And so the planning should be, and so as a bishop, that's my one of my first BYCs was I told the youth this, is like planning nights are meant for presidency meetings. We're never going to say we're having a planning night tonight. I would much rather say, hey, we're going to go play basketball, or we're going to go ultimate frisbee, or we're going to do something, just so they don't think that nothing's going to happen, that it's going to be a planning night. And I'm okay with that. I'd much rather have so the kids come and enjoy themselves and get around the leaders and kind of have some downtime versus being stuck on a chalkboard and saying, you know, what do you guys want to do? And so, you know, I whenever you say that or you send an email out, you know, inevitably it's like, well, didn't we do that last week? I mean, it kind of seems like that, but I mean, even though it might've been, you know, a couple months ago, that's just what they remember.
Yeah. So, but I wonder how much the concern comes up is that, well, we want to do what the boys want to do. And when we don't do what the boys want to do, you know, they don't show up or they find an excuse. And obviously, you know, I think most people realize you can't play basketball every week, like most young men want to do, but
right.
I think they're trying to solve that problem is saying, well, we want to understand what the boys want to do, so that we can plan for that and they'll enjoy it more.
Yeah, that's a great point. And I think you and I were discussing, I mentioned something about kind of a scaffolding and how I liken the different quorums into different types of scaffolding. And so we have the deacon's quorum where there's a scaffolding, you know, around the quorum that kind of goes from top to bottom. And then the teacher's quorum is kind of like halfway up. And then the priest quorum is, you know, pretty much just the foundation. And then the priest kind of should be able to take the lead on that. And so in that scaffolding, that I represent saying, you know, the leaders are surrounding the decisions and kind of protecting what's happening. And so in the deacon's quorum, you know, I would, as a presidency, I'd say, okay, we know that this is what all of the young men like. You know, we have to take pieces from each one of these. And so, you know, we come up with these six ideas. You guys choose three or four. And, you know, and so the boys do get to decide. They get to say their say into it. But you're kind of focusing at, you know, kind of, if you, I'm sure you probably are aware, if we let the deacon's quorum, you know, decide everything, you know, nothing would get decided. It's like, I don't know. And, you know, and I've had enough meetings that, you know, that's how they went. So I've learned to kind of have that scaffolding around them and kind of direct it and say, okay, here are some that you can choose from. What sounds the most fun for you? And so we would kind of do service. We'd have a service oriented topic. We would have usually like a vocation topic. We would do a duty to God topic and then a scouting or fun topic. And so we'd have, you know, each four of those different options, and they would come up with different ideas for each one of those. And then we'd sprinkle them all together, and then they'd choose from those. And as you kind of, the ages got older, they would have more of those decision-making processes and, you know, so forth. Like the priest, all I do is I sit back and they say, okay, write all this stuff on the whiteboard that you guys want to do. And then we'll put dates and leaders in charge of, or the youth in charge of it, to see who's going to be, you know, running it. And so that's how we kind of accomplished that time.
Yeah, I love that. Because I don't think any leader wants to just walk in and dictate what the next 6 months looks like for activities, right? And so I think there's a healthy balance that you just articulated there. Anything else with planning that would be worth mentioning?
One thing also is you have to allow failure. You know, this is a great opportunity. You're there like in this protected environment. They have loving advisors and leaders with them.
Yeah.
It's a soft place to land when they fail. So as a leader, that you have to allow that failure, because then that's what's really going to teach them. You know, they're going to learn a lot of times the best by failing. And so allowing them to fail, I mean, if there's a, you know, if there's a an activity that just blows up and it goes south, let it go south, you know, within reason. But, you know, if they've failed to plan it, if they failed to get the what's needed, then, you know, we in the Army, we called it after action review, AAR. And so we'll get back with the youth and say, okay, what went well? What do we need to improve on? What did you learn? And so that's some of those big failures are some of the best ones that they've learned from. And then the next time it happens, that they've learned from it. And so then they compensate. Like, oh, well, we can't just have a plan A. We need a plan B, and sometimes maybe even a plan C if we're having to worry about, you know, weather or location. And so it's been kind of cool to see that with these different groups and how these kids have learned. And some, you know, a lot of times if you're in a calling long enough, it's almost rinse and repeat, because you only have these kids for 2 years, and then you're kind of trying to start all over. It's like, okay, I taught these other kids, but these kids are all new. And so, okay, we're going to do, you know, you can almost see it coming.
Yeah. 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 And how it's so easy to maybe skip that after action review, especially when the activity doesn't go very well, because sometimes you think, oh man, that was a disaster. Let's never think about that again and move on. Maybe we'll get to the next activity. But and I don't think it should be just this casual conversation as you walk out to the car after the activity, right? But really having a formal, you know, pen and paper in hand or something, is sitting down and saying, all right, what worked, what didn't, what could we improve next time? Because I think that gives the youth the opportunity to say, well, you know, I thought that this didn't go very well, or that one, that was a little awkward or was weird, or, you know, and really giving them a chance to talk it out.
Yeah. And they'll come up with things that I mean, there's been times where they've thought of things where I'd never even thought that way. And I'm not saying at their level, but they had that different perspective. And so, you know, they bring up things that I hadn't even thought of. So yeah, it's good.
Yeah. Awesome. Love that point. The AAR, they call it, huh?
Yeah.
Sound very, very official. That's great. Communication. Communicate with young men's counselors and advisors. Communicate with parents. Man, this is important.
Right. With technology now, it's really easy to get the word out. And so, like I say, we'll throw up on the board, the whiteboard, the chalkboard, say, okay, here's our activities that we have. We have a youth that's assigned to it. And a lot of time, if we didn't have any communication, that's where it would really stay, would be on that chalkboard or whiteboard. Because every week, if everyone, you know, even the priests are always asking, you know, what's next week? Or, you know, what are we doing? And so, if we can get that off, and that's probably important, you know, job for the secretary, whether, you know, each quorum, that they pull that information out, and that there's a list of all of the youth, whether it's email, and then for teachers and priests, a lot of them nowadays have phones, and so it's a whether they use some type of a group texting, we use WhatsApp in our priest quorum, and so we can blast that information out to all of the youth. And then for adults, we're seeing, you know, email and texting, group texting seem to be the best way to contact parents and the adult. But making sure that we're all on the same page, you know, that communication, it's if the parents don't know or think that we have a plan, then it, you know, then they're not going to be too keen on, you know, they're just not going to be as much animated to get their kids to the different events as well, the mutual activities. And so letting them know that there's a plan, letting them know, you know, what the plan is, then they're much more apt at getting the kids where they need to be. So that's the biggest thing. Communicate with counselors, communicate with parents, because a lot of times it would just be, I mean, you'll see once your kids, you know, get to the point where they're teenagers, we can talk to them, you know, as advisors and leaders, like, oh yeah, we got all these good plans, you know. And then the parents, they'll come to you and say, so-and-so said that you guys aren't even doing anything. And so
you're like, what? Yes.
We just went over this, you know, and we presented to the whole quorum. Like, here's the next 3 months worth of activities. They're like, oh, so-and-so, they don't even think that you guys are doing anything. So yeah, it's good to get those set out.
Any other apps you use other than WhatsApp that as far as communications are concerned, or anything in general as far as some applications you use?
For our priest quorum, we use WhatsApp, and that's been, we were just doing group text, but between Android and iOS, there was some kind of friction, and some kids weren't getting all the messages, and so we just ended up going to WhatsApp. As a bishop, Rick, and I know my young men's president now, he's using Trello, and so that's what I'm, as a bishop, Rick, we're using Trello as well to kind of keep things a little organized.
Awesome. Anything else related to communication that we haven't hit?
When you do go on campouts, it's good to kind of have, you know, that the parents know the plan and the relative time frame of when you should be back. And so, you know, making sure that they're in the loop on really all of the details of the activities. If you're on a combined activity and you're going somewhere, you know, for the whole youth group and you know you're going to be late, it's good to get that broadcasted out to the parents. Say, hey, so you know it's going to be longer. You know, we're going to be past 8:30. We got to drive back. Just so that, you know, there's just that really constant communication with the parents. We just don't want to have anything, you know, slip under the crack.
Awesome. Love it. And the final point you listed here is one of my more favorite subjects, is time management. Spend time with youth, delegate so burnout doesn't occur.
Yeah. So that first time I was the young men's president, like I said, I was doing everything. And I had high standards, and I was like, I want these things to be met. One example would be like, we had a fundraiser, you know, putting out the flags on the different holidays. And I remember it was probably the third or fourth holiday. And I was thinking to myself, why am I the only guy out here with the youth? Like, there's other, I mean, why aren't these dads out here? Kind of hit me. Like, why am I out here? You know, 6 a.m. and I'm taking all of the, you know, the youth. I'm the one that's taking them all and put the flags out. What am I doing this by myself? And that was kind of like the epiphany moment. And it's like, yeah, like Aaron, you know, you gotta get someone else involved. You can't just be by yourself. And so delegating out, and I did do that. I delegated out, and there were a couple times where people were getting flags and I got the call. And so then I go out and put them out. And now I've learned, it's like, no, you got to hold people responsible. So I call them. It's like, hey, so-and-so didn't get their flag. Go put it out there. You know, I'm not going to take responsibility because that was their responsibility. And that took a while for me to figure out and to kind of learn that I can't do it all by myself. I, like you, Kurt, am a yes man. And, you know, from the previous podcast that you've talked about, I am the yes man. My wife made sure that I listened to that podcast.
The nice guy syndrome. You're a nice recovering nice guy.
Yes. Yes, exactly. and so going through these experiences of, you know, just taking it all on myself, I'm now, and as a bishop, it's like, okay, I'm going to delegate and I'm going to be happy with what comes out of it. And, you know, you just have to just accept whatever comes out of it instead of expecting what you would have done in that position. You're just going to accept whatever comes out of it because that's okay. And you're going to, you know, they're going to learn from it and you can do other stuff with your time. And what you can do with other stuff in your time is to go to the football game or to, you know, the other activity. I went and visited one of my youth. They were playing football and I stood right next to, you know, their parents, and he looked over his parents and he saw me, and it was just like, he's like, couldn't believe that I was out there, you know, supporting him in this football game. When I lived in Burley and Rupert area, one of the teachers that I was involved with, he and I, we'd go pheasant hunting together. And, you know, we'd spend time out doing stuff, and it worked out. And that's where you get your relationship, right? Is that time that you spend with each other. And so it's kind of outside of the church. And so then when things come up, this one kid, you know, that I went pheasant hunting with, you know, there was a time where he was really struggling. And because of our relationship, it wasn't so much that I was his teacher's quorum, you know, advisor. It was more like I was his friend. And so we could talk about things, and we, you know, and I was able to kind of, you know, help him out. I think I was able to help him out, and then things worked out in the end. But spending that time, and that's what's good about camp out and, you know, these backpacking trips, you know, they have to be disconnected. That's one thing, because they don't want to pack the extra weight and they're not going to get cell service. And so that was one reason why we went backpacking, is so we could detach them from what their normal routine was. And then they'd have to fall into something else. Say, okay, yeah, you can talk to me. And so, you know, good relationship.
Yeah. So such important topics there. You know, with time management, you talk about, you know, I think there's a level of communication with the other adult leaders that you are serving with, right? Because a lot of times it's not necessarily the boys that are letting you down, it's the other leaders. And that leads to some tough conversations you got to have with them, or set some clear expectations that, you know, if a flag doesn't get put out, I'm going to call you and have you go do it, because that's not I'm delegating that to you. You know, you own that. And it's important to be clear.
That's exactly right. Setting the expectations. So, and that's like, I think I've probably said it enough times already, but, you know, not assuming anything, but saying, hey, I want you to be aware, you know, this is your job, or this is your responsibility. And so, you know, if it doesn't get done, then you're responsible for it. You know, I'm not going to assume that and kind of cover for you. So yeah, setting that expectation is definitely part of that.
Yeah. And then on the flip side, just being, like you said, you have to just have some level of tolerance when stuff just doesn't work out, you know, that, yeah, all the flags didn't get put out because I didn't, you know, fly in and save you. You know, and how can we improve that for next time?
Yeah,
or
yeah,
you know, an activity doesn't work out, you know, have that.
Yeah, nasty grams from you know, from people, you know, because we were delivering to people that weren't members of the church, you know, and so it was kind of a community. And so their expectations, you know, you just can't get by like, oh, well, you know, they're members of the ward and they're going to, you know, give us, you know, a free pass. And so, yeah, you know, putting up, you know, we'd go and apologize and, you know, and make sure that they understood that that was, you know, something that was a foul up. And you know, we'll make sure it gets taken care of next time.
Yeah. Fantastic. Well, these have been awesome. I love the 1/2 of 1% rule. I mean, if I'm ever young men's president, that sign is going on the door. The training, the planning, communication, the apps you use, love the time management stuff. Really appreciate you sharing this with the audience. Anything else that we're missing before we wrap up here that young men's presidents need to definitely consider as they walk into this daunting calling?
You know, it's kind of different, because in the elders quorum, you're focused on the elders. And in the young men's, you have both adults and youth that you're ministering to. And really, it comes down to love. If we can love both the man and the young man, then the young men will see what the men are and want to become like that. And so that would be really, you know, loving, you know, across the board. And, you know, there's times where you may have some, you know, you may call some guys that may be rough around the edges. And, you know, and maybe they're not used to some of what other people, you know, kind of would consider, you know, normal, you know, or civil, but, you know, they're pretty curt or, you know, short. But sometimes those, you know, the spirit guides, and that love, if there's that love that's felt, then that's what makes the difference. The quorums, they feel the love, the young men's organization, the love, the advisors, the counselors, and the spouses. I mean, I always made sure when I went backpacking or went out camping with the youth, I said, all right, you guys know that I would much rather be at home with my wife than with you guys. And so on Sunday, I want you to go personally thank Sister Chesley for letting me go camping with you guys. And so it was important for me that they expressed their appreciation and they understood that it was a sacrifice, not just for me, but my whole family, my kids and my wife, especially for me to be there with them. And so I, you know, that love is a
wow. I love that last principle. What a great rewarding effort for the young men to thank the spouse of their leader for allowing them to do what they do, you know? So, well, Aaron, as is traditional on these How I Lead episodes, last question I have for you is, as you look back at your time serving in a leadership capacity, primarily as a young men's president, how has being a leader made you a better follower of Jesus Christ?
How leading has made me a better disciple is it has made me want to be more like my Savior. I've learned that, and that was kind of my epiphany. It was a couple years ago where I realized that the atonement was so important to me that I wanted other people to be able to take advantage of the atonement of Jesus Christ. And I probably signed my fate. I said, you know, Heavenly Father, I'll do whatever you ask me to do with a good attitude from now on. And so, and it was just about a year later that I got called to be bishop. But that was what these leadership roles have done for me, is appreciate the atonement of our Savior Jesus Christ and try to express that love to others, because the atonement is everything. Without the atonement, there's no need for the church. There's no need for young men's. I mean, there's no need for anything, as I'm sure you probably have in the scriptures, but the atonement is, you know, that Jesus Christ is everything.
That concludes my interview with Aaron Chesley. Bless his heart. Good luck to you up in Boise, giving it your all as the bishop of your ward. And what a fantastic opportunity it is to be a young men's president before being a bishop, right? You already connect with the youth, you have some experience, you get the mode of operation as it is. So bless your heart, Aaron, for your diligent leadership. You've been a great supporter of Leading LDS. I consider you a friend, and keep preaching the word of Leading LDS. And if you know of anybody who I should reach out to, especially young men's leaders, young women's leaders, who else we need? Ward mission leaders, we probably need some more Relief Society presidents. I want to hear from you. I want to connect with these leaders and ask them, how is it that you lead? So go to leadinglds.org/contact, and there you can submit all the information and be as descriptive as possible so we know just who we're getting involved with. That would be great. And don't forget to visit leadinglds.org/ministering book to get your free copy of A Culture of Ministering. It's free and will change the way you lead. Until next time, be a leader and not a calling.
It came as a result of the position of leadership which was imposed upon us by the God of heaven, who brought forth a restoration of the gospel of Jesus Christ. And when the declaration was made concerning the only true and living church upon the face of the earth, we were immediately put in a position of loneliness. The loneliness of leadership, from which we cannot shrink nor run away, and to which we must face up with boldness and courage and ability.